You're listening to ESL Podcasts English Cafe, number 137. This is ESL Podcasts English Cafe, number 137. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Visit our website at eslpod.com to download a learning guide for this episode. This is an 8 to 10 page guide that gives you all of the vocabulary, definitions, sample sentences, cultural notes, and a complete transcript of this episode. This episode is going to be an Ask an American episode where we listen to other native speakers talking about a topic and then explain what it is that they are saying. This gives you a chance to hear someone's voice other than mine, as well as people speaking at a native rate of speech. Today's topic is a very popular form of music in the United States called bluegrass. We'll talk about what bluegrass music is and listen to some descriptions and even some samples of it. As always, we'll answer a few of your questions as well. Let's get started. Our Ask an American segment today is about bluegrass music. Bluegrass is a very interesting American style of music. It started, or we might say it had its roots, it had its beginnings in traditional music from Ireland, Scotland, and England. What happened was these immigrants came and they settled in the United States, many of them in an area called Appalachia. Appalachia is an area that includes the Appalachian Mountains, which are on the eastern side of the United States. Appalachia has been and still is in some ways a poor, rural, mountainous area. The states of Kentucky and Tennessee, for example, have poor areas still in this Appalachian mountain chain. The immigrants came and they brought with them their traditional music, and they combined it with some other American music forms, such as blues and jazz. And you get this combination coming together in this particular style of, I guess we could call it country music. It's a type of country music called bluegrass. Let's first listen to a small sample of bluegrass music, and then we'll talk more about it. In bluegrass music, just as in jazz, one instrument, one musical instrument, plays the melody, and the other instruments provide backing or accompaniment. They go along with that main melody. The melody is the main notes of a particular piece of music or song. Bluegrass music has all of the instruments playing the melody at some time, but unlike traditional music, they don't all play it together. So first the banjo will play it, and then the fiddle will play it, and then a different instrument will play the melody. And the melody gets, we might say, passed around. It gets moved from one instrument to the other as you are listening to it. We'll listen now to a description of the origins or beginnings of bluegrass music from someone who is a teacher. Let's listen, and then we'll go back and talk about what he said.
It was brought over from the old country, But then it was developed in the Blue Ridges and that, and developed father, son, and as it, each time it's passed down to another generation, it gets a new personality. So it is truly American music.
This gentleman describes bluegrass music, saying it was brought over from the old country. It was brought over, meaning it was taken from one place and brought here, in this case, to the United States. The old country is a traditional expression, at least in American English, to refer to Europe, the countries where most of the white immigrants to this nation came from. We talk about the old country, meaning the countries where the first European immigrants came from. Now it could be used to describe any country, original country where someone came from, but traditionally it referred to European countries. This, of course, would be in contrast to the United States, which is a new country. In fact, the Americas are sometimes called the New World. Well, this gentleman says that bluegrass was brought over from the old country, but then it was developed in the Blue Ridges. The Blue Ridges is a part of the Appalachian Mountains. Sometimes we refer to a part of them as the Blue Ridge Mountains. The ridge is like the edge or the top of a mountain. If you travel to the Blue Ridge Mountain area, you can actually see why it is called the Blue Ridge Mountains, because there is a certain bluish color when you look at them from a distance that is caused in part by the trees that are native to that area, that grow in that area. So this music was developed in the Blue Ridges, the Blue Ridge Mountains, this gentleman says. It continued to develop within families. This gentleman says it developed father to son. And each time it's passed down to a new generation, it gets a new personality. To pass something down means to give it to someone, usually a son or a cousin or someone who is younger than you are. Often we use this expression in talking about things that are in a family that belong to a member of a family, and that person gives it to his or her son or daughter, and they give it to his or her son or daughter, and so forth. So it continues to be part of that one family. Well, bluegrass music developed within families in this area, and each time it gets passed down, each time a new generation of people begin to play it, it takes on what he calls a new personality, a new style, or a new particular emphasis. Let's listen again.
It was brought over from the old country, but then it was developed in the Blue Ridges and that, and developed father, son, and as it, each time it's passed down to another generation, it gets a new personality. So it is truly American music.
Bluegrass music uses mostly what we would call acoustical instruments. The word acoustics refers to the study of how sound moves through the air. Here, however, it means the opposite of electric. These are non-electric instruments. There's one exception to that. Sometimes the electric bass guitar is used with bluegrass music, but most of the instruments are acoustic instruments. Most of them are stringed instruments, meaning you have strings that you play on, like a guitar. A banjo, which is a special kind of guitar. A fiddle, F-I-D-D-L-E, which is just another word for a violin. But when the violin is used in this kind of music, it's sometimes called a fiddle. There's also a mandolin, another kind of guitar, or looks like a guitar, and a bass, which is something you would also see in a symphony orchestra. It's a large instrument that plays very low notes. The bass is often used in jazz music as well. I said a fiddle is really the same thing as a violin. Let's listen now to this instructor, this teacher, talk about how the fiddle is different than the normal or regular violin.
The real difference is the traditional fiddle player, because they play several strings or several notes, will flatten the bridge. They basically customize the violin. They'll pull the sound post back a little bit to get more of the whangy sound, and they'll use a harder, more steel-type string.
We get some vocabulary related to the violin here and musical instruments. He begins by saying the real difference, that is, the real difference between a violin and a fiddle, is that the traditional, the normal, the regular fiddle player, because they have to play several notes at the same time, will flatten the bridge. To flatten means to make flat. The bridge is the little part of a violin or fiddle that is where the strings sit on top of, towards the end of the violin, the round end of the violin, to put it that way. He says they flatten the bridge. They essentially customize the violin. To customize means to make something specifically for your purpose, to take something else and change it. He says the fiddle players will pull the sound post back a little bit. The sound post is the part of the violin that's inside the violin that helps produce the sound that a violin makes when you play the strings. They do this in order to get more of a wangy sound. I'm not exactly sure what he means by wangy here. We have a similar word, however, which is twang, T-W-A-N-G, which is the kind of sound that you sometimes hear in American country music. So I'm thinking that is what he is referring to here when he says wangy. He says also that the fiddle players use a harder, more steel-like string as compared to a classical violin player. Once again, it's the same basic instrument, just modified and customized. Let's listen again.
The real difference is the traditional fiddle player, because they play several strings or several notes, will flatten the bridge. They basically customize the violin. They'll pull the sound post back a little bit to get more of the whangy sound, and they'll use a harder, more steel-type string.
Bluegrass music is relatively new. It was developed really in the 1940s in the Appalachian Mountain area. It was a combination of, as I said before, traditional music brought over from Scotland and Ireland, as well as the blues and jazz that were prominent, that was to be found in many places in the American South, especially among African American or black musicians. Nowadays, you can hear country singers who specialize in bluegrass music. Dolly Parton is a very popular country singer who has recorded some bluegrass albums. There was a movie a few years ago with George Clooney called Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? That also used a lot of bluegrass music. So if you rent that movie, you'll see a little or hear a little bluegrass music. Yeah, you'll see it being played too, I guess. Our final quote here comes from someone who's talking about the reputation of bluegrass music in American culture. When you say bluegrass music, people will often think of country music, and when you say country music, they think of farms, what we would call rural areas, places away from the big cities. This person says that is not a complete picture of what bluegrass music is. Let's listen.
you know, you see it on a lot of truck commercials and that kind of thing, but I think it has a lot more application than that, and it has a lot more deep roots and feeling than just being used in some car commercial somewhere.
He starts by saying, you see it, meaning really you hear bluegrass, on a lot of truck commercials and that kind of thing. Trucks are often associated, at least in American culture, with rural areas, places outside of the city. There's also something of an association that people who live in rural areas are somehow not as sophisticated, perhaps not as intelligent, as those who live in the city. So it's sort of a negative connotation, that is, a negative meaning that is implied here. He says, I think bluegrass has a lot more application than that, meaning it can be found in other contexts. It's not just for truck commercials. It's real music that you can listen to and enjoy. He says it has a lot more deep roots, that is, a lot deeper roots or origins and feeling than just being used in some car commercial somewhere. So he's saying here that it is a more serious and important kind of music. It is not just something that you should listen to when you are watching a truck commercial or advertisement. Let's listen again.
You know, you see it on a lot of truck commercials and that kind of thing, but I think it has a lot more application than that, and it has a lot more deep roots and feeling than just being used in some car commercial somewhere.
Bluegrass music, like jazz, blues, and other kinds of country music, is an American kind of music. It began in the United States, but now, just as with jazz and blues, you will see people from other countries also recording bluegrass music. In fact, there's a group from the Czech Republic in Europe, which is very famous for recording bluegrass music. If you have a chance to listen to some, I think you'll enjoy it. It will certainly remind you, if you watch American movies, of the Appalachian mountain area, the rural areas in the eastern part of the United States. Now let's answer a few of your questions. Our first question comes from Baku, B-A-K-U, in Azerbaijan. Baku wants to know the difference between a resume and a CV, or curriculum vitae. A resume is usually a single page or a small number of pages that summarize your skills, experience, and educational background. When you're applying for a job, most jobs, they ask for a resume, a summary of your qualifications. A curriculum vitae, which is sometimes simply called a CV, is a longer, more in-depth kind of resume. It usually is something we use when you are applying for a more professional or higher level job. It involves detailed information about your educational training, where you went to school, whether you have taught or done research, any published books or articles that you had, any speeches or presentations that you may have made, perhaps any awards or honors that you've been given. This would all be part of a CV. A CV is often used in university jobs. If you are applying to be a professor, they will ask for your CV, your complete and detailed list of all of your accomplishments. Many companies and organizations require a resume. Sometimes an organization will ask for something called a CV. And that is often a company that is involved in education or in science or in some research area. Resume is the more general, more common term that most companies use. Juan from Colombia wants to know how we spell or pronounce certain numbers, whether we say zero or we say O, the letter. Sometimes in English, people will pronounce the number zero like the letter O. For example, the famous character James Bond from the British movies is 007. We don't say 007 or 007. We say 007. This is just a shorter way of saying zero. It means the same thing. In telephone numbers also, you will sometimes hear people say O instead of zero. My number is 555-0304. That would be the same situation. You could say my number is 555-0304. It would mean the same thing. As a general rule, it's safest to use zero when you're not sure whether you can say zero or O. That's because there are some circumstances where you can't say O instead of zero. For example, you may say, we received zero responses to our advertisement. You can't say we received O responses. You have to use the number zero. That's why I say, if you're not sure, it's easiest and safest to say zero when you mean zero, and use O only if you know that that is a situation where it is acceptable, like a telephone number or 007. Yevgen, Y-E-V-G-E-N, from Ukraine, wants to know the meaning of the expression one over the other. For example, your boss may say to you, I want you to tell me your reasons for choosing one over the other. The expression one over the other is used when you are comparing two possibilities, two options, which are similar, but one is better than the other. If I'm looking for a cake for my son's birthday, I taste one cake, a chocolate cake. I taste another cake, a lemon cake. I have to choose one over the other. I have to make a decision and decide which one is best. I chose chocolate over lemon. We thank you for choosing ESL Podcast over other podcasts you may listen to. If you have a question or comment, you can email us. Our email address is eslpod@eslpod.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. This podcast is copyright 2008 by the Center for Educational Development.